Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't
oh,
you
yeah.
know we're gonna have a solar...
Started to burn too many things we found. That's the Glorious. Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the words to the song, except for the one word, Solartopia, which I wrote. I am Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, your host here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show at PRN. Thank you, crew in New York. And we got two great guests with us, and we're going to talk about the Green New Deal. Molly Basler and
hey
Howie
there.
Hawkins, you both with us. Hey, Molly, how are you?
Yep.
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good, good, good. Molly and I are in great state of California. And Howie, I think you're in New York, right?
I'm in Syracuse, right.
Syracuse, Indian country. Iroquois Confederacy country. So listen, today we are going to do a full hour on the Green New Deal. Although I do want to congratulate, I want to congratulate Donald Trump for proclaiming himself the King of Israel.
Oh yeah.
Or is it the King of the Jews?
The chosen one.
We are what's that? Oh, the chosen one. He's the chosen one. He's the King of Israel. We're glad he got a promotion from being merely the guy in the White House. I never call him President of the United States, by the way, and I never say that he's running for re-election because he was not elected in the first place. And he's not the legitimate President of the United States, so we can dispense with that. So Donald finally has a legitimate title. He is the King of Israel. Mazel tov, Donald, on your promotion. it should come right after your bar mitzvah. I mean, maybe what we should do, since he's now the King of Israel, we should have a world televised circumcision for Donald Trump. Mm. What do you think, guys? That would be.
I don't know if I'd want to see that.
I don't think I watched it.
Well, you know, that's a good point. I don't know who'd really want to watch it, but we could do his nose. Maybe that would help. So we have a King of Israel now. He is dismantling as rapidly as possible all environmental protections. I do want to also regret that Jay Inslee has dropped out of the race.
I know. I think he wants to make sure that he is,
again, the governor of Washington, and he is a good governor, although they do have a nuclear plant that he's got to shut down, the Columbia Generating Station, formerly known as Whoops 2, needs to be shut, and that is in Washington. So we need a little more aggressive behavior on Jay Inslee's part as governor of Washington to get that shut.
Yes.
And, of course, we also know that the glorious, brilliant, genius, spineless, worthless, useless Democrats have decided not to have a debate on global warming.
I know.
I mean, these people are just so brain dead. It is
pathetic.
It is staggering. Staggering how worthless and useless the Democratic Party is. And Howie, of course, I don't have to run that by you, as you are the likely Green Party nominee for President of the United States. And we will be watching your campaign closely. And Molly, you and I have done quite a bit of work outside the worthless, useless boundaries of the Democratic Party. But, you know, I want to state very clearly here right now, Howie, since you're going to be running for president, this is, you know, my two cents worth. The election this year, or next year in 2020, and thank God it's still a year away. I mean, if it was August 2020, I'd be really plotting, but we do have more than a full year to deal with this. This election, and you, I want your comments on this, first Molly and then Hallie. I am telling everyone, and I am of the firm belief, that this election will be decided by the millennials. There are 86 million millennials, children, people born between the early 90s and the early 2000s. So the youngest of the cohort is just now becoming eligible to vote. If you were born in 2001, you're now you'll be 19 or 18 or 19 in 2020, and so you'll be voting for the first time. And with 86 million millennials, it is the biggest cohort, demographic cohort in American history, bigger even than the baby boom. The baby boom, which was January 1st, 1946 to December 31st, 1964, was 76 million people. Now, I am not a baby boomer. I was born 7.5 hours before. I was born December 31st, 1945. So I predate the baby boom by 7.5 hours. The baby boom, our generation, we had two things going that we needed to do in the 1960s. We needed to completely revamp the culture and turn the American culture upside down, which I am reasonably confident in saying that we did do. I mean, it's easy to take it for granted now, but looking at the culture of the United States of America in 2019 as opposed to 1969, it is totally upside down. And you can start with gay rights. I mean, even in 1969, a gay person was, until Stonewall, which was in June, end of June 69, gay people were completely trashed. I mean, if you were gay, you were oppressed, unemployed, harassed, horny, and just completely outside. And now we got a guy openly running for president who's gay, and they didn't even burn him at the stake. So starting with that, the music, you know, the dress, the sexuality, feminism, the world has really turned upside down. We're not totally there. But we have had a cultural revolution in this country. The second order of business was to end the empire. You know, the Vietnam War was still going on. We had the criminal psychopath Richard Nixon in the White House. And I would have to say that the baby boom has failed to win social justice, end the empire, upturn capitalism, and the whole deal. So that's what the millennials are going to have to do. And the reason that Joe Biden, and I'm sorry to go on here, but I wanted to set the stage. The reason that Joe Biden is not electable, I think all of the Democrats, all the major Democrats, can beat Donald Trump. Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, those four, I am reasonably sure, could defeat Donald Trump. Joe Biden will lose to Donald Trump. I mean, this guy belongs on a park bench feeding pigeons, for God's sakes. And I'm 73, so I can say that. Bernie Sanders, who's his age, it's not an ageist comment, because Bernie Sanders, who's his age, does not. Bernie's got his faculties. He's enthusiastic. He doesn't make gaffes. I mean, he's out there. If the Democrats, God help us, nominate Joe Biden, Trump will get another term and the world will end. I mean, that's what's going to happen. And if the reason is the millennials. And this idea of going to the middle, the mythological middle of the road with politics, is ridiculous. There is no middle anymore. And the only way the Democrats win is if they excite the millennials and get the squad. You know, AOC, when Nancy Pelosi said, well, these four women just represent four votes, she was off by 85,999,996. I mean, those four women are young. They're millennials. That's what counts. And so here we go. Hallie Hawkins, you are running for president. I'm assuming that it's your plan to excite the millennials. And since we are going to talk about the New Deal, I'll just throw you this softball, and then Molly will jump in. The front page of the New York Times has Bernie Sanders, and thank God he did this. I mean, you know, you just got to hand it to Bernie. There is no compromise in the guy. Quote, here's the front page headline in the New York Times. Bernie Sanders' Green New Deal, a $16 trillion climate plan. I mean, thank goodness he did this. So, Howie, you're running for president. You're the Green Party candidate. Tell us about your Green New Deal climate program, and then, Molly, you'll pick it up from there.
Sure. Well, okay. I happened to be the first candidate in the United States to run for a Green New Deal when I was running for governor of New York in 2010. And it became the signature issue of the Green Party over the last decade. And we're very happy that it's got the national spotlight now. The problem is a lot of the Democrats who are supportive of it, and let's face the fact, you know, as you said, your do-nothing Democratic Party, they defeated it. The AOC, Ed Markey, non-binding resolution, Pelosi won't let them vote on it in the House, and McConnell let them vote on it in the Senate, and all the Democrats ducked. They voted absent, and four of them actually voted against it. And then what's left now with the non-binding resolution misses important things we were raising. For us, the Green New Deal is an economic bill of rights. Bernie Sanders is talking about that. That's great. It's still in the non-binding resolution. The rights that Franklin Roosevelt called for in his last State of the Union address in 1944 and 1945, the right to a job, an income above poverty, a decent home, comprehensive health care, a good public education, and a secure retirement. We need that because we got to make sure that people get behind the energy revolution, don't feel they might lose their jobs or their communities might lose factories and that kind of thing. So that's part of what we need to build the coalition for the energy transition. Now, when we ran in 2010, we said we need 100% clean energy and zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2020, because that's what the climate science said. That was from Hansen in the U.S., James Hansen, from Kevin Anderson in the U.K., and others from Germany, Australia. It's based on the carbon budget. Now we're 10 years later, so we're saying 2030, and that remains our goal. So, yes, Sanders' plan today is the best one that's come out. It's got realistic numbers. He's talking about $16.5 trillion over 10 years. I'm actually working on a budget with a guy that was Seymour Melman's research assistant for 20 years. He knows this stuff. He wrote a book called Manufacturing Green Prosperity back in 2010. We're getting about $2 trillion a year to get to clean energy by 2030. So Sanders is much closer than, say, Inslee, who was talking about $9 trillion over 10 years. That won't do it. And, you know, Bernie still doesn't talk about a ban on fracking and new fossil fuel infrastructure, doesn't say anything about nuclear power. He does call for military spending cuts without saying how much. We're saying 75%. And he doesn't say a lot about drawing down carbon. We not only have to stop releasing the carbon, we got to draw it down. He does have a civilian conservation corps to restore habitat and forests, which will do that. But that needs to be specified because we're over the 350 parts per million safety line that James Hansen's been talking about and Bill McKibben popularized. We're at 415 now. So we not only have to stop releasing the carbon, we got to draw it down. So, you know, the Greens are out here because if we don't set the standard, we're afraid the Democrats will keep diluting the content. But I have to say Sanders' plan is by far the best I've seen from the Democrats.
Good for you. Okay, well, we'll use that as a starting point. Molly Basler, let's jump in and hear from you on the Green New Deal.
Yes, I am. Well, first of all, I just want to say that I disagree with you, Harvey, in the sense of I don't think it's just the millennials that, you know, is going to save the day. It's all of us, young, old, black, white, rich, poor, coming as, you know, to unify and to make a difference and vote in someone, yes, who is going to put the Green New Deal in place. And I, you know, as you know, and I worked with you on, we did an event, you know, I did the Green Dream Campaign, which is local action, asking the Democrats on a local level just to change their ways. It's not just about legislation and putting in laws, but having people on the grassroots level change their ways that they're doing things, products that they buy. We need to be supporting. I don't know if this is in the Green New Deal, but that we as Democrats, you know, we only support companies that are green and sustainable. And someone should knock Amazon off its ass because he just, Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, doesn't give a crap about the environment and just passed this whole thing with Amazon and their, you know, a new plastic packaging so he can fit more packages on his trucks. And the power is in the people, as you were talking about, like in the 60s and the changes and the cultural revolutions. And we need to rise up as a people. We should be in the streets of what is going on on our planet and the things that are happening. I mean, it's just, it's completely outrageous. And the things Trump is doing and saying, but I think a lot, you know, so much has gone on. We've become apathetic. And lazy in a lot of ways because everybody's on their technological, their social media, they're waiting for their Amazon package, and people have become complacent. Some have, but we need to get a candidate in there, not only to put in the Green New Deal, but someone who is going to inspire the people, all people, to rise up and to do the right thing, that we live with integrity. And it's not just about money, and we wouldn't sell our neighbor down the river for a few bucks, or would we sell our planet off? And we won't, and we will change the way people are doing things and the way they are consuming. There's all these great companies popping up all over the place now that, you know, no more plastic, and they send you the product in the mail, but not like Amazon does. It comes in a simple cardboard box. So I think all of it is really I think the Green New Deal is great, but it has to go into the grassroots level as a people and have a candidate who is going to inspire people to do things differently, because it's the people have to take responsibility also. It's not just about, the government's going to take care of me, which they haven't. They haven't taken care of the planet. They haven't taken care of people. It comes down to people taking their power back and also what they consume. We've created a country that's full of greed and massive consumption. I mean, it's just like, oh, yeah. I mean, our whole economy is based on consumerism, which has turned into a feeding frenzy. And
ironically, we're missing one big word here, and it's the word that was in the most made famous in the movie The Graduate, except in a different way. As you'll recall from the movie, Dustin Hoffman, of course, it dates us. A lot of people, maybe in the younger generation, haven't seen the movie, but Dustin Hoffman is graduating, and this business guy comes up to him and says, I got one word for you. And you remember, you know, with the implication that this is the business he should go in, and you guys know what the word is?
Plastics.
Plastics. I mean, plastics is going to kill the earth along with the rest of it. I mean, it's, here's the words that are missing is plastics and glyphosate and a few others. And the reason, Molly, that I emphasize the millennials, yes, you know, we've all got to do it, and you're 100% right. And Howie, as a politician, at least been a green guy in green politics, knows that you think about your constituencies. But the bottom line is, as best I can tell, pretty much everybody over 30 in this country has chosen sides. And the millennials as a group have also chosen sides. You know, millennials are divided. The polls show them being divided about 50-50 between capitalism and socialism. And all these clowns that are, you know, yelling socialism as if it's a red flag, to make a pun, missing the fact that the young people really understand that socialism is democratic socialism or social democracy is really the way to go. I mean, you know, we have to have a system, and the person that takes care of people, and the person that I hearken back to the most, and I've just written the history of the United States, in which, as usual, the great hero is Eugene V. Debs, the socialist who was thrown in prison exactly 100 years ago by our most fascistic white supremacist president. And this guy, you know, talk about the Democrats, Woodrow Wilson was the dictator of the country in this period exactly 100 years ago. He was way more dictatorial, basically because he could get away with it, than Donald Trump. at this point in time. If Trump could be more dictatorial, he would be. But Wilson really, you know, ran the table. So, Howie, in terms of how we move ahead here, what is your plan? Well, to put the Green New Deal before the public, and what do you think about my comments about the millennials?
Well, our plan is, I mean, we're running for president. People say, well, the Green Party, why are you running for president? You should be running locally. But we can't run locally if we don't have ballot lines. And about 40 of the states, what you do in a presidential election affects whether you have a ballot line for the next election cycle. So that's a big reason why we're running. And the way we put this on the agenda is we build from the bottom up. There's over 500,000 local elected offices in this country. Greens have a couple hundred elected. We should come into the 2020s electing thousands and build from the bottom up, you know, city, county, village, town, and from there state legislatures and then Congress. We get a green caucus in Congress. We run somebody for president. People in the media will pay attention. And I think you're right. The millennials are the ones that are ahead of the curve on these issues. Although I will say, you include the baby boomers and the generation in between, which was more conservative, public opinion, both on the cultural issues you mentioned, but also on the economic class issues, on the foreign policy issues, is way to the left of both parties. The problem of American politics is public opinion doesn't translate into public policy because we have such concentrated economic power, and that translates into concentrated political power. So that billionaire class that Bernie Sanders talks about, they're running the country in their own interest, not the interests of the rest of us. Which, you know, I'm glad you brought up the question of socialism. I'm calling our Green New Deal this time the eco-socialist Green New Deal, because it will give us the power to make the right choices, a socialist economic democracy. You know, as green consumers, I think that's good, especially the way to educate us about what's going on with the environment and how our products affect it. But we're stuck with decisions that are made at the point of production, whether it's a company or the federal government. For example, it wasn't consumer choice, market demand, that had the U.S. choose nuclear power over solar power. The Paley Commission coming out of the Truman administration and reporting to the Eisenhower administration on our energy future because they were worried about oil running out recommended solar power. But Eisenhower said we're going with the so-called peaceful atom. Consumers didn't make that choice. And that's why we've got to have an eco-socialist society where we can plan production to meet everybody's basic needs within ecological limits. And then we'll have the power to make the right choices. Democracy is no guarantee we will, but if we have the vested interest making the choices, it's a guarantee that we won't make the right choices.
Guarantee you that. Yes, and very quickly, and I'm going to come back to Molly. I want to make it clear before we lose track of this. Bernie Sanders calls himself a socialist, but he is a social democrat. The dividing line, technically, between socialism and capitalism is that in socialism, the state, in the interests of the people and the workers, run the means of production. And Bernie Sanders has very clearly stated that he does not support that. He doesn't believe in that, at least generally. I'm sure there are some institutions, like maybe the banks that, and certainly the railroads, that Bernie would advocate public ownership. But by and large, he does not push public ownership, but he does call him socialist. Himself. I think that's a critical distinction in the long term, although right now, who cares? It's not a big deal. Franklin Roosevelt was a socialist.
I would argue that Bernie gets credit for putting socialism up for discussion. It used to be a conversation stopper. Now it's a conversation starter. And I have an op-ed out there about how Bernie's really a New Deal liberal. Although today, in his Green New Deal plan, he wanted greatly expanded public ownership of the energy sector. So, and I've known Bernie since the 70s. You know, he campaigns for the New Deal programs, which depend on taxing the rich to fund. Of course, if the rich still have the power, those programs aren't secure. But I think, you know, he himself understands, and he kind of hits at that when he says, you know, if we're going to implement this stuff, the people got to be mobilized against the power structure. So I think it's implicit in what he's saying, but now that we're talking about socialism, we might as well talk about it being social ownership and democratic administration of the major means of production, because that's what we need to take the power from the billionaire class.
Yes, and you rightly cited, and I'll get to you, Molly, in a sec, you rightly cited the Economic Bill of Rights, which Franklin Roosevelt put forward in 1944. Unfortunately, it was not passed or in put into the by Congress or put into the Constitution as a constitutional amendment. The Economic Bill of Rights is one of the great documents in all of human history, but it was never implemented. Thank God we did get the initial Bill of Rights, which, you know, I'm, as far as I'm concerned, the first sentence, the first amendment of the Constitution of the United States is the greatest sentence ever adopted by any government. But we needed what Franklin Roosevelt called for, and that has not been implemented. Molly, you you have been talking, and I know when we worked together, you were very, very focused on consumer products. And I got to tell you, I went to the Fish Grill in Malibu 2 days ago with my daughter to have dinner, and all our utensils were wooden, which was a great relief to me. It was, you know, I guess, has Malibu outlawed plastic utensils?
Yes. Actually, I met the woman, Sheila, who worked on that. Yes, they've outlawed plastic. They've outlawed plastic straws. I'm pretty, all the utensils are now wood or bamboo. But it's such a small dent. It has to be world, it's got to be throughout the country and then other countries. Also, I just posted a article from the New York Times about, you know, our production of food, the meat and dairy industries, and it's this country, it just makes me sick that the industries that are the wealthiest in this country are the worst for the planet and the health of the people and the animals. I mean, the agriculture, pharmaceutical, oil and gas, I mean, it's all, and it's like our country is based on killing the planet and its people that live here. I'm just shocked. And the more
I
learn,
terrible.
It's like, what, how did we, but, you know, it's obvious how we got here. We got here because of greed, human beings and the ego and the greed. It's just shocking to me. So, but, you know, eventually we've got, I mean, even eating fish is not good. You shouldn't eat fish anymore. I mean, veganism, plant-based diet is the way. That's why they're implementing all these vegan, plant-based, I don't know if you've noticed, they're now in Kentucky Fried Chicken. The Whopper has, is plant-based. They have a meatball sandwich that's plant-based now at Subway. Because our world, the country knows, the government does know that we can't sustain on meat and dairy, and we are moving into a plant-based diet. That's one of the biggest ways we can help with carbon emissions.
Well, you should call it not merely a plant-based diet, but a planet-based diet, because that's, you know, meat. I haven't eaten meat since 1970, but I do eat fish. I am addicted to salmon, but I know it's going to go away, so I'll have to go into like a, We should call it Fish Anonymous, Fish Eaters Anonymous. I can get counseling. You know, I do want
salmonaholic.
Yes, I am. I am a salmonaholic. There's no doubt about it. And it's the only. It's really the fish of choice. I mean, I will occasionally eat other fish, but it's salmon that I'm addicted to.
Well, you know, salmon are dying off. I mean, I just was there.
Yeah, I know.
They're almost going extinct. I mean, they raise them in farms. But, you know, because of the climate changing, their pathway, they have this very treacherous spawning season. They go up and here and there. But all the, you know, because of the currents and the warm water and stuff, it's all messed up. The poor animals can't spawn, can't lay eggs anymore because they don't know if it's spring or summer or winter. It's just devastating. Within 10 years, we're supposed to lose 1 million species to extinction. I mean, you throw.
Well, we may be one of those species. That's
right.
Part of the issue here.
So people don't get that. They think, all those species, but they don't connect themselves as a species. Like we're down. We're right there with them. So, but
well,
I think you call it the green revolution, like the industrial revolution, that it creates jobs and the green economy is going to be the next. I mean, that has to be really pointed out too. The Green Deal.
It's the only economy that's available to us. I wrote a book in 2007 called Solartopia, where I envisioned a green Earth and what it would look like. And I'm going to try before the election to get a new one out called the New Solartopia, where I update the vision. Ironically, it started with a solar-powered airplane ride in Germany because they had just installed the first hydrogen filling station for automobiles. And I will start again in Germany because they're going to go, they'll be the first major economy, the fourth largest in the world, to go 100% green. I do want to insert one thing here before we lose track of it. And Howie, you mentioned a carbon tax, but I am not a supporter of a carbon tax. I am a supporter of the heat tax because the way things go in this world, if you're not 100% careful, the bad guys will jump in and warp what you're calling for. So the carbon tax is being used as an excuse to support nuclear power. Now these liars and thieves claim that nuclear power does not emit carbon, which is a lie. Nuclear power does emit carbon, but it also, very importantly, emits heat. There are 440 commercial atomic reactors or thereabouts in the world. And they each one of them, is there a dog in the background or something?
Yeah, I'm gonna get him in, sorry. Mute.
Okay, whatever. So I'm sure the dog is saying stuff that's very important, but we're not in that language at the moment. So, Howie, especially as the Green Party candidate, I would like you to consider not the carbon tax, but the heat tax, because nuclear power gets under the barrier of a carbon tax. It does emit carbon. They never want to admit it, but all nuclear reactors emit carbon-14. Which comes out in some ways in the form of carbon dioxide, actually. The carbon isotope is radioactive. But the point is that nuclear reactors operate at 300 degrees centigrade. You in upstate New York have been stuck with four of them by that criminal Andrew Cuomo, who's underwriting four nuclear reactors for $7.6 billion, which could have solarized the whole damn state. But nonetheless, in a carbon tax, nuclear power gets under the barrier. What we need to do is have a heat tax. And we can factor carbon emissions into that. But all nuclear reactors are less efficient in their use of heat than coal, oil, and gas. So they need to be taxed for the heat that they put into the atmosphere. 440 reactors at 300 degrees centigrade exploding from time to time, that's a lot of heat. And so, Howie, I hope you'll consider that and introduce the concept of a heat tax as opposed to a carbon tax.
Well, I have not thought of that before. I would have to look at it, you know, see what the heat impact is, what it would be across the different energy sectors. The way I want to deal with nukes is to say a ban on new nuclear reactors and a plan to phase them out rapidly because they're not clean energy. You got the nuclear waste, you got the danger of emissions or of a catastrophic accident. You got the ongoing emissions like the carbon-14 you mentioned. And, you know, the world is going crazy. I mean, Russia just put a couple nukes on a barge, launched it into the Arctic Ocean to power oil and gas drilling in the Arctic Ocean, the first of seven they're planning. I mean, what could go wrong? And so this has got to be something we do internationally. The carbon tax, I mean, what I like about it is it makes the frack gas and oil, which is what's flooding the market right now, more expensive. You remove the subsidies from the fossil fuels and then tax them progressively higher. And that enables businesses, governments, consumers to figure out how they can make their investments in renewables, and they know when it'll pay off. It's much better than cap and trade because those markets fluctuate. They get gamed. You're right. Any law that we pass or any policy that we advocate can be screwed up by the power structure. We can get the law passed, and then we got to get it enforced. That's half the battle. So I think the concept is good, but you're right. It's a struggle to get it done right.
Right. So I think you can really grab some attention and make some headway if you look at the heat emissions. 300 degrees centigrade is over 500 degrees Fahrenheit, and these reactors are extremely inefficient. Like I say, they're less efficient than any fossil burner. A nuclear power plant wastes more heat in the conversion to electricity than any fossil burner. And, you know, they like to say it's significant. But you got 440 of these. I'd like to see a measurement of the heat impact on the global climate of the explosion at Chernobyl or the four explosions of Fukushima, which are still dumping radiation into the Pacific Ocean in massive quantities every minute. So, Howie, as the Green candidate, you could break some ground here by transcending the carbon tax, or you could call it a heat and carbon tax. But the concept of heat, release of heat, needs to be introduced into the dialogue. I mean, Hansen and these other climate people are calling for a carbon tax, which is fine, except that they're exempting nuclear and they're advocating nuclear, which is insane. It's beyond insane.
Yeah, the costs, the delays. I mean, just in terms of getting the energy as inefficiently as it's produced, it just doesn't make sense. They're good they're good on the climate, but not on, you know, the alternative energy.
Howie, and Molly, you understand this because we're working together to get Diablo dealt with, the Diablo Canyon reactors here in California. But the real day, I am 100% sincere in this, and this is, you know, I'm going to tell you right now that I think, without a doubt, that the number one threat to the survival of the human race is the 440 reactors, because it is an absolute certainty that many of them will be exploding in the coming years. You know, we were told, when we first started the anti-nuclear movement, we were told by these industry clowns, you know, someone would get up and say, oh, and these nuclear reactors are going to explode, and some jerk of an engineer would stand up with his slide rule and say, no, it's physically impossible for a nuclear power plant to explode. And they give you this, you know, engineering blah, blah, and now five of them have actually exploded. I mean, seriously exploded. Four at Fukushima and one at Chernobyl. And they claim, well, those weren't fission explosions. We're not sure of that. It's a high likelihood that there was fission explosion at Chernobyl. And Unit 3 at Fukushima, if you look at the video, that looks like a mushroom cloud to me. So as far as I'm concerned, the number one threat with all that's going on is the continued operation of the existing reactors. It's the future reactors, that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Because of the incredible breakthroughs with renewables. But the existing reactors scare the hell out of me. Molly?
So like you had said too, that I agree with that, with the Green New Deal. I mean, I don't know it word for word, the Green New Deal. I mean, I know some of it, but like, yeah, shouldn't we put it in there that clean energy, green means no nuclear? I mean, to me, it goes hand in hand. If you think that nuclear is clean energy, I can't even fathom that. I mean, it's like, it is. It's so dangerous. And wasn't there just, now I saw it, I didn't read a lot about it, but wasn't there just an explosion in Russia? Like two nukes went off or something? I mean, but they're kind of hush-hushing about it.
Howie, you read about that. You want to tell us?
Yeah, that was apparently a nuclear-powered cruise missile that could be weaponized for a nuclear weapon. This is something the U.S. played around with in the 50s and 60s and decided it was too insane. But apparently the Russians have been experimenting with it. That's what we think that explosion was.
Yeah, and, of course, we don't know much, you know, since everybody was so thrilled that the Soviet Union fell. We have an even more repressive government in Russia, and without the social programs, and you know, we're not hearing from Donald Trump's mob boss, Vladimir Putin, about what's going on there. But Howie,
we got out of the treaty, so we don't have the inspection rights we had before.
Right, and we don't know what this was.
The ABM treaty.
It appears, as Howie says, to have been a missile that was supposed to have been powered by an atomic reactor, which is just, you know, beyond psychotic, you know, and they killed a bunch of people. And Rachel Maddow, if you can look it up, did a spectacular show. I mean, when she's on, she's on. She devoted a really in-depth you know, half hour to trying to figure out what had happened over there. And I suspect we'll never really know. It appears that there's a dead reactor at the bottom of some ocean over there in the water, of course, polluting the entire ecosphere, as is Fukushima. And, you know, it's dropped out of the headlines. I will say, while we're on that subject, by the way, that I don't know, Howie or Molly, if you've both seen or either of you have seen the Chernobyl series, which I think is on HBO.
I watched advertisements. No, I haven't seen it.
Well, it is unreal. It's real is what it is. I mean, it is a spectacular, terrifying piece of work. I mean, I've been dealing with nuclear energy since 1959 when I did a report on it in ninth grade, and as an opponent since 1973. And I got to say that I was petrified by this thing.
Wow.
And they did. I mean, it is. Do not watch it late in the night. I mean, I couldn't sleep. I am almost never affected by anything I watch to the point that I can't sleep. And I was just riveted, and it is very, very accurate. The guy who made it is actually pro-nuclear. How he could have made this thing and remained pro-nuclear is beyond me. But, you know, and it is actually, my understanding is it's the number one watched TV series in history. Actually, Colbert mentioned it the other night that he watched it. So, Howie, have you seen the Chernobyl series?
I've heard about it. I don't get HBO. I'm waiting for a way to get access to it. But
I should watch it. We bought it. You as a candidate for president, you have to see it. And Molly, you also have to see it. But and you have to understand that not only is it accurate, I mean, it's extremely accurate, but they also omitted the very worst of the Chernobyl disasters, which is the birth defects to the children. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen, but I have seen the photographs of children over there, and it is beyond a nightmare. Okay, so I want to proceed here, and I'll start with you on this one, Molly. Plastics. How do we, I mean, to me, this is absolutely, I cringe every time I get something in plastic, and it's like every other minute. I mean, this country, and now they're building this giant plastic, Amazon, I guess, is building a giant plastic factory. Someone, somewhere, is building this huge plastics. How do we get...
No, Shell Oil is building a huge plastic plant. In fact, I'm getting Climate Reality, Al Gore, the project. I've been in contact with a bunch of activists over in Pittsburgh to shut this thing down. And if I have to fly there, I'm going to. Because it's Shell Oil is building this plastic plant, and it's out. It's in Beaver, Pittsburgh. I mean, in Pennsylvania. It's outside of Pittsburgh.
Beaver Valley. That's where
And the woman head of it is Hillary Mercer. She has quoted saying plastic is good for the environment, but what is happening is because of electric cars, they know what's coming down the pike, the Green New Deal, the Green Revolution. So now they're pumping up because, I mean, plastic is fossil fuel. I mean, fossil fuel is killing us, and there are huge conglomerates, as we know. So we've got to push back. And there was, I don't know if you saw a segment on 60 Minutes. There was a scientist named Madoff. I think, what's his first name, Richard or Michael, who is the scientist who has come up with a product to replace plastic and actually a fuel we can put in our cars and we don't even have to change the tanks or anything. And so, and then you don't hear anything about this guy because he doesn't get approved by the FDA or whatever he has to go through. So it's like there's change out there that can be possible, but we have these huge conglomerates and we need someone. And Howie, if you're up to the task, we've got to shut the fossil fuel industry down. And, like, because they are the really, as we know, it's horrible. So plastic is part of that. But the plastic plant is not Amazon. It's Shell Oil. But, yes, Amazon started packaging all their products now in a new plastic package so they can, you know, because they had them in boxes. So now they figure out a way, oh, if we put them in these plastic packages, they squeeze, we can squeeze more on the trucks. And yet they're not recyclable, they're not made of compost, they're not made of plants. So it's like I tell people, don't shop on Amazon. The only way we can push back at this point is the consumer.
Right. Well, I just got a I donated to Sierra Club, and I got a backpack, and I just and it came today and wrapped in plastic.
Yeah.
Jeez. So you know, Howie has now. By the way, both of you are going to be with me at the Left Coast Forum in October 11, 12, and 13. And we're going to have the second annual Solartopian Congress. And Howie, you and I are also going to be talking separately on something. So that's going to be in Los Angeles at Occidental College in early October. And we will deal with a lot of this. But Howie,
also,
you know, as a presidential candidate, maybe you can take your lead from Molly on this and also say a bunch of stuff about plastic. What do you think?
Well, I've been. It was one of the issues I raised as a candidate for governor in New York, trying to get a ban on single-use plastics as a first step. And we've got straws, I think, where the state is at right now. And the problem with the fossil fuel industry, and particularly fracking, is they're now saying, we got all this oil and gas. That's the feedstock for plastics, and so they're going to build a whole lot of plastics factories. The problem with these synthetic plastics is they don't degrade in the environment. As Barry Commoner used to say, you know, if we use natural products, agricultural feedstocks for our products, you know, soap instead of detergents, for example, there are enzymes that co-evolved with these natural products, these biological products, that break them down in the environment. And the only problem you got to worry about there is getting too big a concentration in like water of phosphates. But or phosphorus. So what we need to move toward, where plastic or something like plastic is the best example, are bioplastics using agricultural feedstocks so they're biodegradable. And I think the way we do that is we got to set a date certain where synthetic plastics are banned and support the development of a bioplastics industry. And I think
absolutely.
The policy
we're talking about. Is there a bioplastics industry now?
Yeah, but it's
small. Is there significant production?
Yeah, I don't know the details, but it's been around for a while. There's a whole field of green chemistry that tries to develop products that are biodegradable and recyclable. And the problem is cheap oil and gas undercuts the prices. So we've got to phase out and ban the synthetic plastics and then support the development of the bioplastics.
You know,
let me jump in real quick, Molly. We're actually getting close to the end. Molly Basger, how do people get in touch with you?
You can go to my www.greendreamcampaign.com and see what I'm doing to help save the planet. And you know, there's a contact page and. You can contact me that way. And I just want to share also there is a big climate strike coming up September 20th that all through the country we're trying to, you know, march. And there's a group of us here that are meeting and we're marching to City Hall. All over the country we're rising up to raise awareness. So just to give a shout out to that, that's September 20th. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm posting information all about the strike and where we're going to be and where we're going to meet up to march. And it's the Climate Strikers, the Youth Organizers, Sunrise Movement, Climate Reality. We're all coming together. Climate Hawks, 350, Bill McGibbon. You know, we need to rise up and unify. That's to make changes. So, September 20th, Green Dream Campaign.
And Howie Hawkins, how do people get a hold of you?
The best way is go to my campaign website. It's howiehawkins.us. You know, Google that.
Okay.
And you can find out what I'm saying and how you can get involved if you want.
Now, both of you, the PRN will provide a URL of this show, which I will email you, and you guys can send it around afterwards. And I'll try and get the blurb in as quickly as I possibly can. I want to mention my my book, People's Spiral of U.S. History, is about to come out. And Howie, I'll send you and Molly each a copy, and you can write reviews for the Internet. That's the only way I'm going to be able to publicize this thing. So let's get back here. How about we, and I'll ask you, Howie, because you're the political candidate, how about we set a date certain for a permanent ban on new production of both gas-fired automobiles and plastics, not to mention glyphosate and a few other things. Let's come up with a date certain to ban all this stuff. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. That I campaigned for that for the state of New York last year, and it's part of my presidential platform this year. We said in legislation we wrote for the New York State Legislature with some legislators, for New York, the date certain was 2025 for zero-emission vehicles. And
that's
the plastics
right.
ban, trying to remember, that never got to legislation, the full ban. But I think I was talking about by 2021 that it'd be phased out in New York State. So that would have been a three-year timetable. That's the
we've got to ban gas-fired cars, plastics, glyphosate, and what else?
We got to ban fossil fuel. That's it. Fossil fuel. Get them out of here. Shut them down. They've got to move into solar. That's it. And where's our governor? Where's Gavin Newsom in all this? It's like the worst thing that's happening in the, you know, is the destruction of our planet. And it seems like some of the people are, you know, still not aggressively moving forward to, you know, for 2025, for electrical charge stations, so the consumer can move into a green new deal, the green dream, and have the green revolution. But we've got to move faster than we're moving.
Well, Harvey, you asked what to add to that. Nuclear power. We need a date certain
by
which the nukes are shut. And
well, yesterday would be good.
It would. We got to have a plan in each region so that the power is replaced. And in a lot of places, here in New York, you mentioned the subsidies. We don't need those nukes. They're only continuing to run. Exelon wanted to shut them down. So New York is sending $7.6 billion to Exelon in Chicago when that money could have. We already got the power to replace those nukes when they shut down. They're shut down a lot for refueling and other technical problems. So we can shut a lot of them down right now, and then the rest we can phase out shortly.
Right, and we got these two reactors at Diablo Canyon. And let me explain to this real quick. They actually cost us capacity because they can't be shut down up and down to match the demand. You know, they're on 24/7 when they're on. And they actually force renewable energy off the grid in California. Because of Diablo Canyon, many wind and solar facilities are forced to shut down to give way to the capacity coming from Diablo. It's insane. And we cannot get the governor here to even inspect them. And we know that those reactors are embrittled and cracked. It's outrageous what's happened. And now we have a bailout in Ohio, which I've had a couple of shows about, which, you know, they want to force the people of the state to spend $150 million a year to keep two reactors operating until they blow up, which is going to be real soon, I'm sure. Okay, let me give you a quick summation here. We just got a minute or two left. Howie Hawkins, what do you want to tell the folks, and then Molly?
Well, you know, a lot of people are saying, why are you running? We got to get rid of Trump. And the problem is, I don't think the Democrats are defeating Trumpism. If they really wanted to get rid of Trump, they would have impeached him by now. And the best way to fight the right is to vote for what you want and make the politicians come to you. If you give your vote away to something that's the lesser evil, that's what you're going to get.
Yep.
Right. The word was, Gene Debs said once, it's better to vote for what you want and not get it than vote for what you don't want and get it. And I will guarantee you, if Joe Biden is the nominee, Donald Trump will win. I think anybody else is going to beat him, but not Joe Biden. Not a chance.
Wow.
And that's because of the millennials. Molly Basler?
Well, I say to everyone who's listening that,
quick.
Was there an Eve?
Molly, I'll have to get you back next time. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thank you both. Howie Hawkins, Molly Daisberg. We'll be back
Thank
on together.
Thank you. Go green. Go vegan.
Yep. Solartopia. Thank you, Crew in New York. See you next time.
Solartopia. 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 Don't you know?